going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
47 senators have pronounced Donald John Trump guilty as charged. 53 senators have pronounced him not guilty as charged. The Senate adjudges that respondent Donald John Trump is not guilty as charged in the second article of impeachment.
President Trump has been acquitted on both charges by the Republican-led Senate. The final vote, 52-48 on abuse of power and 53-47 on obstruction of Congress. Trump was impeached by the democratically controlled House for abuse of power and obstructing Congress in the investigation of the Ukraine scandal. Tonight, we are discussing the unfolding historic moment and the political implications of impeachment, as well as last night's State of the Union address. My guests are Dr. Julianne Malveaux, economist, author, and Democratic political strategist, Ravi Perry, chair of Howard University's Department of Political Science, and Republican political strategist, Malik Abdul. If you have a comment, if you have a question, and I know you do, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Hello, everybody. Has anybody gotten any sleep over the past?
Not at all.
Not a whole lot. Well, I tell you, this may be a wake-up call for America, no matter what your political persuasion. Dr. Malveaux, where are we after this impeachment acquittal for the president?
We have it empowered and emboldened a dictator, basically in finding him not guilty of obstruction. The Senate has said, you can do whatever you want. And this is what the man has been saying since he was put into office. I could shoot somebody in Fifth Avenue and nobody would do anything about it. Well, now you can basically lie, steal, and cheat. You know, every time he opens his mouth, he tells at least five lies. And so watching the State of the Union, and why is he still mad at Obama? I mean, you know, the previous administration left us as a mess. No, they didn't. I have the growth you've never seen. No, you don't. Growth is at about under three. He promised 3% and 4%. Certainly the unemployment rate is lower than it's ever been. I'll give him credit for that. But he never gives credit to the fact is that Barack Obama took us out of the Great Recession and basically sowed the seeds for the expansion that we're now experiencing. And that expansion has slowed. In fact, in manufacturing, we only created 46,000 jobs last year. So in manufacturing, you have a recession. So, you know, as I listen to the State of the Union, all I could think of was the braggadocio that man exhibits. Plus, people have said it on TV, but it looked like a game show.
Yeah. Before I get to the State of the Union, though, I do want to really focus on the most recent incident. I mean, this was historic. This is the, you know, only the third president to ever be impeached. The third president to be acquitted in the Senate. Of course, we know Richard Nixon never got to the impeachment process. I have to ask you, you know, is this, Malik, one of those situations where we have yet another Teflon president?
I don't think this is about the president having, you know, Teflon skin or anything. We can pretty much acknowledge that there was a predetermined outcome. If you look at what happened back in 2017, where Democrats were calling for the president's impeachment, they've been doing this since before he took office, and actually since then, since he's taken office, actually. So for me, the fact that even in the House, that there were Democrats who said, well, we're going to impeach you before there was an even article filed. And you have the same thing on the Senate. We have senators who were on the campaign trail talking about the fact that the president, they would vote to impeach the president of the United States. And so, people are saying that, well, you know, we wanted some impartiality there. But I don't think very few people came to the table with with the idea that they weren't going to vote either how Democrats vote or how Republicans vote. The unfortunate thing is that I think what's going to happen after this, and you've heard many people talk about it, is that post-Trump, when the next Democrat president takes office, which will happen, Republicans are probably going to repay the favor. And so now impeachment, it can be anything, such as Obama when he obstructed Congress. They can actually say the same thing about a Democrat in the future. And I think that as much as we dislike Trump, we have to really look at these things to see whether or not, you know, we're setting a precedent.
Well, McConnell set a precedent when he refused to let that man who was nominated by Barack Obama onto the court. So now if 45 wants to make a Supreme Court nomination, heaven help or not. Is that a precedent? Well, you know, so y'all talk about precedent when it's convenient. That's all I have to say.
Let me ask you, Ravi, where is America right now in the wake of last night's State of the Union and, of course, the impeachment trial in the Senate, the acquittal?
Well, we are in Black History Month, just as a reminder of that. And we are at a moment in our American history where just yesterday the president saw fit somehow to award a documented racist over decades on the airwaves with a Medal of Freedom award. I mean, the same type of award that's been given, I mean, to people like, you know, John Lewis and Colin Powell and, you know, people who clearly have
Rosa
Parks, right, clearly have a record of lifetime of service to this country, not a record of a lifetime of bashing down folks that they disagreed with on the airwaves, which is really what all Rush Limbaugh has done. That and invested in Snapple. And so it's really concerning to me. The state of our political affairs is made very clear, right? When you look at the State of the Union, you don't even have to watch it and listen to it. Just turn it on silent, and you see the applause go up for when the president's speaking, and only one side, the folks stand up, right? No one else is clapping. I actually remember a time not so long ago where State of the Unions were pretty much nonpartisan episodes, where people were reasonable in those events. Both the president, whoever that was, and the members of Congress, in that there wasn't a litany of lies. There wasn't this era of normalcy now of just not of mistruths and of exaggeration. And this is something that if you are a Republican, you should be concerned about this, because the next president is going to come along and you're going to try to convince the Americans that they're actually speaking the truth. Why would anyone believe that when you have a president who, regardless of your political persuasion, you have to admit has lied on national television every single day since he was first inaugurated? That is a fact.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the political roundtable talking about the impeachment trial, the acquittal of President Donald Trump in the Senate, as well as last night's State of the Union address. We want to hear what you have to say about it. Give us a call again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Malik, Ravi jumped the gun a little bit on me, but I do want you to react to this from the State of the Union last night.
I am proud to announce tonight that you will be receiving our country's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Of course, talking about Rush Limbaugh, I have to tell you that to me was probably of all of the events during the past 12 hours, 18 hours, that was the most shocking to me. If you can give me two hats, the black man hat and the Republican hat. Either way, did that shock you or offend you or disturb you or bother you or nothing?
Well, my hats are the same. Black and Republican, that's just who I am.
Okay.
Rush Limbaugh's history speaks for itself. The fact is that, you know, he is sort of an icon of sorts in the conservative movement. So the notion that people like him or that the president himself was interested in giving him a Medal of Honor, I'm pretty sure that was because of the announcement of his stage four cancer. Medal of Freedom. Medal of Freedoms themselves. I'm personally not moved at all. I mean, anyone from Ellen DeGeneres and other people have gotten Medal of Freedoms, and
Ellen DeGeneres is not known for being a racist.
Yeah, but I'm talking about.
Let's be clear.
But I'm talking about how concerned I am, how interested I am, how I care about Medal of Freedoms. I literally do not care whether it was Barack Obama. I don't know many of the people that he gave one to. I don't care how many Trump gives them to. I would not have given Rush Limbaugh a Medal of Freedom at all. That's just my personal opinion. But with his announcement of basically dying within 5 years with his diagnosis, I'm not surprised that the president did it. But it's nothing that I'm going to get up in arms about because the president of the United States gave someone a medal. For me, now, if you're talking about something like a Medal of Valor, like military, something like that, those are the ones that I'm actually, I get excited about, like those type of, that deal with military service. But whether or not we like a person and so we're going to give him a Medal of Freedom, I don't really care about
Medal of
Freedom.
But you know, what he has done is cheapened the Medal of Freedom. When you give it to an avowed racist, and believe me, in the early 90s, I was the target of his ire I don't know how many times. And he just about came about that close to calling me an itch on the air. Mm. So, you know, he's a despicable human being. I don't care if he's revered in conservative circles or not. To say Rush Limbaugh and Rosa Parks in the same sentence is just amazing to me. But, I'm not surprised at anything that man does. He has cheapened the presidency. He has cheapened the Medal of Freedom. He has cheapened so many things. He's cheapened the truth. He doesn't tell the truth. Every time he opens his mouth, they're lies. I mean, did they document, was 11,000 or 13,000? You know, thousands of lies.
That's 16, actually, according to the Washington Post, 16,000 plus.
And if not lying, it's taking things out of context. So if you look at all the economic statistics he spouted, most of those were wrong. Most of those are simply wrong.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the acquittal of President Trump in the Senate during the course of his impeachment trial, that now at an end, and also the State of the Union last night. What do you think? Barry, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Barry. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, the sad part about him being acquitted is it's not going to register in his head that he needs to back off or tone down the rhetoric or be a little more conservative in his approach to the general masses. If anything, it's emboldening him to be more aggressive and do more of the same that he's been doing for the past 3 years. So it's not like we're not going to see a new and improved Trump. You would think he'd have some sense of remorse getting so close to the fire, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Your thoughts about that, Robbie? Thank you, Barry.
This is a president that has never shown remorse ever. He hasn't shown remorse for the Central Park Five that he has accused and has said has the right to die today, still today. They should still die today, according to him, for a crime that they did not commit. He has not in any way shown remorse for bringing the immorality and the level of lies that he's brought to the White House. And he has never shown remorse for the way that he has disparaged the institutions of government. This is something that we all should be very concerned with. I'm actually concerned by the fact that we still are talking as if Donald Trump is a normal president who actually has empathy skills. It's clear he does not have empathy skills. If he had them, he would not be lying 16,000 times, according to the Washington Post, as you just said. I mean, this is a guy who does not have the ability. I literally don't believe he has the capability of discernment, of understanding right from wrong. This is why he can't really see what was so wrong about what happened in Ukraine, because for him, I don't think his brain cells work good enough for him to understand the difference.
Let me ask you, Malik, about this, because I think this is one of the most fascinating things that happened today. Mitt Romney, the only member of the Republican Party who voted to convict on Article 2, abuse of power. I want you to talk to me about just this little piece of what he shared.
Corrupting an election to keep oneself in office is perhaps the most abusive and destructive violation of one's oath of office that I can imagine.
Talk to me about Mitt Romney. Where do you think he will be when the history books write the story of this saga?
For Democrats, Mitt Romney after this probably will be John McCain. For Republicans, Romney will probably be a John McCain. And my point in saying...
Very good.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, Mitt Romney, he did vote to convict him on one of the two charges, the abuse of power charge. You know, people can have, and I think this is something that's missing in the entire debate. We're acting as if people can't have an opinion about the same, different opinions about the same thing. So when I was talking about how people came to the table, already decided that Trump is guilty of this or he's not guilty, you know, Mitt Romney, I personally think that there may be some get back or something for John McCain in his decision to actually vote on the abuse of power charge. But it is possible for people to believe that Trump, as he did, and I'm one of those who said there was nothing perfect about that call at all, but it's actually possible to believe that that's not something worth removing a president from office, because when you're impeaching a president, that is the ultimate goal, is to remove them from the office. I think they should have gone the censure route. I think they probably should have gone to the article, the several instances cited by Mueller as far as the things that Trump did in the Mueller investigation. But that did not happen. But I think what happens is, especially on the left, if you don't believe everything about Trump that they believe, then it's something inherently immoral about you or your moral compass, or whatever the case may be. And I just disagree with that. Romney is who he is. He's going to face the ire of the president probably from here until he gets out of office.
You know that it has been reported that, you know, that privately more than the 51 other Republican senators feel the same way. They just weren't willing to do it. And that's the piece that I'm trying to get at.
That's a horrible piece. Yes, I mean, many Republican senators on the record said that he had done something wrong. But they said they didn't think it was worth removing, but he had done something wrong. And so he does wrong. There are no consequences. For his whole presidency, he never apologized to those Gold Star parents whose child died.
Hold that point. I'm going to let you finish. I have got to take a break, and because, boy, we're about to run long to the bottom of the hour. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to hear from you about State of the Union and the acquittal of President Trump. Give us a call again, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in about 15 seconds.
We're entering our 14th year on the air. Here on From the Press Box to Press Row, I'm Donald Ware. Join me each week as I take you...
The radio network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the political roundtable. My guests are Dr. Julianne Malveau, economist, author, and political strategist, Ravi Perry, chair of Howard University's Department of Political Science, and political strategist Malik Abdul. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Malveau, finish your point, please, if you could.
Well, if, you know, the challenge is that this man has been given so much power that Republicans are afraid of him. They're afraid to say that he's wrong. I mean, all this is just the last instance of his wrongs. And many Republicans, off the record, they abhor his behavior. They say he's classless. I mean, classless. We think of a president of the United States conducting himself with some decorum. He does not. And his Republican colleagues have said this off the record or on television, but they won't say it from the Senate floor. They're afraid that he'll go campaigning against them. That's how they've empowered him. Mm-hmm. And this is a problem because he now is a dictator.
Ravi, this could very well be the launching pad for Donald Trump to perhaps be the most powerful Republican president since Ronald Reagan. Am I overstepping here?
No, not at all. And I think that's what the danger is for the entire United States of America. Dare I say, for every marginalized person in this country and woman, and certainly for the rest of the world, since we are the leaders of it. Any Reagan 2.0 is a disaster, certainly for everyone sitting at this table, and for anyone who shares our membership groups. This president is someone who has chosen time and time again to argue on behalf of the few. And for him, the few are those people who make campaign contributions to Republican causes, and primarily who support judges. And that's what's one thing I really want to emphasize. Mm-hmm. The reason why conservatives are all in lockstep with this president is really not because they like him. They don't like him, as Dr. Malvo just said. Everyone knows that. But they agree with him on conservative judges. Mm-hmm. And if you are a woman in this country who's concerned about abortion, if you're a gay person like Mayor Buttigieg, who's concerned about one vote keeping you from not being married again, if you are a person living with HIV, tomorrow is National Black HIV/AIDS Awareness Day. If you are a black man annoyed by every time you walk outside the house, you don't know if you're going to make it home because you don't know if you're going to get stopped by the police and get killed on your way from CVS. These are the kinds of people who have been laid out to dry by this president time and time again. And if folks can't move beyond their partisan bickering and their ideological camps and see that even if you're a conservative, you can have another president that has conservative views that doesn't disparage common humanity every single day like this guy does. And if folks can't see themselves being willing to do that, then at this point, I just ask those people to pray in their own prayer closets for their own souls.
Let me go to the phone lines. Eddie calling from D.C. Eddie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, good evening. Basically, I'd like to suggest that we challenged President Trump to prove his statements about black employment, the increase in black employment. One of the ideas I think we could pursue would be to say, look, let's meet some of these people. You know, can you fill a stadium with 1,000 of these black people who've been employed? I also want to suggest that, you know, to listen to a black radio station and hear basically the same exact thing that white radio station is talking about, basically opinions and disgust about this man's morality. I think that's a total waste of time, and I'm disappointed.
Well, what would you suggest that we talk about, Eddie?
Specific solutions.
I think the solution would be to vote in November.
Amen.
But thank you so much for talking
Amen.
To me. Let's go to Kimberly. Kimberly, calling from Upper Marlboro, what's on your mind?
I'm disappointed in the Republican Party, and I agree with your previous caller. We need to make sure that we get out and vote those people, not just the president, but those people in the Senate, the House of Representatives, whoever, that are not doing the job that we put them there for. Nobody, a group of people, should not be scared of one man. I'm scared of the people in the United States that are rallying behind him and thinking that these things that they are doing are okay. Martin Luther King is turning over in his grave with these things that are happening now.
Okay. Kimberly, thank you so much. Here's one of the things, Malik, that Eddie did touch on, although I don't think he went far enough. The president talks about the unemployment numbers, and you know that this is the man that he is, where when he was running for president, none of the numbers that came out of the U.S. Department of Labor, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, all of that stuff is wrong. It's wrong. He said that he believed that unemployment could be as high as 40% at one point, which we know that was hyperbole. Or do we know that was hyperbole? Because now
it was a lie.
He believes that it is true.
He likes the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers.
Yeah.
Because they reinforce his point. What he does not do, and what many people do not do, is to delve into the numbers. We've had people dropping out of the labor market. We've had people at the bottom with stagnant wages. Their wages have not risen. At the bottom, at the top, wages have risen some. I have to say, I've used BLS data since I wrote my doctoral dissertation in 1980. And I found the data to be as accurate as data
as
could
be. As it can be,
So I don't have any questions that when he says the unemployment rate is 3.8, the black unemployment rate is 5.2, 5.3, I don't have any doubt that those numbers are correct. What I have doubt about is the way that he massages the numbers, refuses to drill down on the numbers, and in fact, when the numbers did not work for him or when he could besmirch Barack Obama with the numbers, he did. Now that he likes the numbers, he cites them every time he opens his mouth. This man, it's not even about his morality, his ignorance, the way that he's trampled over rights. He has no sense. He just has no sense.
So help me with that, Malik. Yeah, because, I don't think that is an anti-Republican. That's just, it's ridiculous.
So here's the thing. We're all political, so we know how this works.
Okay.
And whether it was Barack Obama or even the mayor for that matter, you're going to pull stats that helps your argument.
But those stats weren't made up those numbers.
But you're talking about what he did before he actually got into office. Why can't we talk about what he's doing now?
Okay.
So
Dr.
Malvo said, you know, the numbers are what the numbers are. The numbers are the disparities between black and white unemployment, all of those things exist under every single president. Our employment numbers have always been high. They're higher than white population under President Trump. They're going to be higher under the next president, whomever that may be. But as a political strategy, as a communication strategy, we know that people use these numbers, whether they're Department of Labor numbers, whether they are numbers from the Department of Justice. They use numbers, they massage numbers, because they're trying to paint a larger picture of how beneficial their policies might be for anyone. And it doesn't matter. Barack Obama literally did the very same thing. And
okay,
that's something that happens all the time.
Okay, so let's talk about something that happened last night. If you want to talk about what's happening now, this is a portion of what he said last night talking about health care.
But as we work to improve Americans' health care, there are those who want to take away your health care, take away your doctor, and abolish private insurance entirely.
Now, that statement was very vague, but one of the other things that he did say last night was that he talked about pre-existing conditions. That was the biggest lie of all, because publicly and in the courts, that the Republican Party, as it relates to health care, has done nothing to ensure that any change in whether it's Obamacare or any change to health care broadly would ensure that your pre-existing conditions will be part of the new health care system. And that's dangerous.
Yeah, well, that's something that Donald Trump has actually said before. Last night wasn't the first time that he mentioned that he was favorable towards pre-existing.
But he's not.
But what Donald Trump says and what the Senate ultimately does is a different thing. Donald Trump has actually signaled many times before that he's actually for this. Unfortunately, the Senate has not moved on any type of health care.
Unfortunately,
deal.
His own administration right now is in court defending that people who have pre-existing conditions, like me, should not be able to go to a new job and have their health insurance cover that. He's defending that in court right now, today.
And so that's something that he actually can be criticized for. But if we're talking about what Donald Trump has said, now that's not something that I would agree with at all. There are many things about Donald Trump that I don't agree with, but just because there are people who may have a problem with some aspect of conservative governance or Republican or Donald Trump, that doesn't mean that I have to. That's something that can be fixed out. But aside from Donald Trump, Congress should actually be working on this. That's what they should be doing, both in the House and in the Senate.
Well, the House has already done that, and it's one of the 400 bills that the House of Representatives have passed that we're waiting on Mitch McConnell to actually look at.
Well, we know that's kind of how politics works, because when you're talking about 400 bills, you can send 1,000 bills to the House, to the Senate, but it doesn't mean that the Senate are going to pass those bills. You pass those bills to get your numbers up to say that, as you just did, this is what we sent to the Senate, and they're not acting on it.
I would just like McConnell to at least open them up and read them.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the process is. I don't know if it's a different process that exists at another time, but we sit around and act like that we don't understand how these things work, and we know how it works. So you guys like to cite, 400 bills. Well, we know she can send 1,000 bills to Donald Trump, and it doesn't mean that the Senate are going
to
give me
to the Senate.
She can send 1,000, 1,500 bills to the Senate, and it doesn't mean that those are going to go anywhere, and they know that at the time that they pass
the bills in the House, and the fact is that the Senate could act on some of them. They haven't.
I agree.
As the I'm trying to think, the bill that was to give HBCUs more money passed in the House, languished in the Senate for 2 months until I don't know who moved McConnell to make it happen.
That was Lamar Alexander. Actually, what happened in that particular case is that Lamar Alexander, he put a hold on it because there were things in the Higher Education Act that ultimately ended up in the actual bill. There were things that he wanted. So he tied the funding, the lapse in funding, to the changes in the Higher Education Act. And that's something that ultimately ended up in the bill. Now, that's something that
That's something that left HBCUs hanging.
But that was already in motion, but it was a lapse.
You do not use HBCUs as some bargaining chip.
Well, you can use Ukraine as a bargaining chip, so what's the difference?
But a permanent funding, what Lamar Alexander wanted was a permanent funding mechanism. That's what he said at the time, and it ultimately, that's what ended up happening, that now HBCUs have a permanent funding mechanism.
Well, it's not a permanent funding mechanism. It's a limited funding mechanism for a limited amount of time, which is why you have candidates like Senator Warren, who's going around saying that they actually should have a more permanent funding mechanism up to the amount of $50 billion, with a big B. The other reason why the HBCU bill got passed, Republican Senator Alexander did hold it up because he's head of the education committee there in the Senate. But also, as a retiring senator, he did want to, be fair to him, seemingly want to do good by this bill. But he also held it up deliberately lengthy. And if it were not for the grassroots efforts of like the United Negro College Fund and HBCUs like Howard and others that were down on Capitol Hill lobbying to get this passed last fall, we might not be here today. The lights might be cut off.
You know, don't forget about Congresswoman Alma Adams from North Carolina, who actually has successfully put together a bipartisan HBCU coalition. And she's been brilliant in bringing Republicans in, and they've been as enthusiastic as Democrats.
That's good.
But, you know, I just, you know, as a former HBCU president, I cannot fathom and I cannot condone the use of these schools as somebody's political chip.
That's right.
Let me go to the phone lines. Carmita calling from Germantown. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to say, and I don't want to get off topic as to my point for calling in. My point for calling is that, okay, what are we going to do moving forward? Has anyone thought about what this means if he was impeached, but if he was removed from office? I'm not for number 45 and what he did. I think he is criminally guilty of all charges. However, what is the next chain of command? Mike Pence. What are we getting with that? And how long are we going to get with that?
Well, if let us say that, and I don't know what the process is, because I'm assuming that if he were immediately removed from office, just as Richard Nixon resigned, then Mike Pence would have been immediately placed in the Oval Office. But there is still an election in November. And so Mike Pence would not automatically become president beyond Election Day in November. And so that, you know, so I think that that's the short answer to your question. But I think more philosophically, whether it's a Mike Pence or whether it's a Donald Trump, it's a rhetorical question as to what are Americans going to do? We shall see what Americans are going to do in November, Carmita.
And you know, the thing about Mike Pence is that he is 45 gone to charm school. I mean, I can't imagine him, you know, making some of the extreme statements that we've heard. But he has done extreme things in Indiana against GBLTQ folks, against black folks. So, you know, while impeachment was justified and necessary, it didn't pass. But we can't really. The caller who called earlier and said, what are we going to do about the future? I mean, that's the issue right now. The impeachment thing, okay, whatever. But the African-American community ought to be fully engaged in getting voters out in November. That's the most important thing.
And here's why that should be the case. Remember, we had a GOP-led Senate intelligence report that said last fall that Russia was smart enough to not only hack this country, and they were successful, as a reminder. They successfully hacked the DNC. They successfully hacked the RNC. You should ask yourself, listeners, why they only released the information on the DNC. You should ask yourself, why you think someone like Senator Graham, who was anti-Trump from day one, suddenly switched their tune after WikiLeaks and after the RNC was hacked by Russia, but we knew nothing about it. But I can bet you that a whole bunch of other GOP senators know a lot about that hack. And so that Senate Intelligence Report said that black folks were targeted. Yes. We were targeted. And I'm interested
on
in not
social
just,
media,
right,
Facebook,
on social media,
Twitter, right, Instagram.
That we were expressly targeted, which means that a foreign power is smart enough to know that black people have the power to sway a national election in the most powerful country in the world. And if we as black people ourselves don't understand that we have that power, then there's something that is just horribly wrong about our own connectedness to our own country and our own institutions and our own ability to save ourselves from a country that has, for hundreds of years, subjugated us against our own will. But we have the power to do that. But we have to be willing to use the same system that enslaved us, the same system that said we're three-fifths of a human, the same system that we had to fight for hundreds of years to even have the right to sit in certain political rooms and to vote and to have opinions and to go to school. That's the same system we have to use to make our lives better. And the only way you do that in America is by registering to vote and voting.
Carmita, thank you so much. I want to go to another point from last night's State of the Union address.
Yet for too long, countless American children have been trapped in failing government schools. To rescue these students, 18 states have created school choice in the form of opportunity scholarships.
Help me with this, because, and I don't want to drill all the way down into the weeds of this, of the school choice thing, but that statement did bother me in the sense that, yeah, I'm all for giving children that are in underserved communities the opportunity to go to the best schools. But why can't we make the schools in these underserved communities good enough? And instead of just giving them, the money to go to communities, in other words, the best and brightest, leaving these underserved, you know, I don't feel one way or another about it, but as a product of a public school system, it bothers me that nothing was said about helping to improve more broadly the American public school education system?
Well, Harold, you're not going to get that. The Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVoid, and I call her DeVoid because she's devoid of good sense. But Betsy DeVoid, her family owns charter schools.
Yeah.
So she basically is trying to create more charter schools. Here's what I know for sure. When you look at aggregate data for public schools and charter schools, they look about the same. Now, both systems have outliers. There's a public school, I have a private school, charter school, for example, in Chicago, where every graduate has been admitted to college. Mm-hmm. That's not the rule. That's the exception. So we have to be clear. This is about reducing the size of government. This is about basically buying into some brainwashing, if you will. The teachers basically do not have necessarily the same credentials that the teachers do in the public schools. And sometimes the public school teachers are unionized and the private school teachers are not. So charter schools are measurably different and not necessarily different from the better. People just buy into, well, charter schools are better. There are bad charter schools. There are bad public schools.
Yeah. So I think you asked about the choice. That's essentially what you asked about, choice. And I'm one of those. I'm definitely pro-choice. I live in Ward 8. I don't know where everyone else lives, but I live in Ward 8. And our two high schools, I think the on-time graduation rate in Ward 8 at Anacostia and Ballou High School hover around maybe 50% or so. Now, there are kids. There are people. I have parents. I have friends in my community in Ward 8 who every year, and I'm sure we know other people across the city, who go through this school lottery where they have to throw their name into a bag and hope their child gets...
gets to leave their community to go to another school.
I'm one of those who believe that we should have an all-hands-on-deck approach. So that is inclusive of both traditional schools and charter schools. As far as the opportunity, I know kids who have benefited from D.C.'s Opportunity Scholarship. So, no, I'm not going to be against someone from Ward 8 who can't get the type of education that they need or may not even have the familiar resources to get the type of education they need at one of the Ward 8 schools if they have an opportunity to go to Sitwell, for instance. If they have an opportunity to go to Murray or any school, I am pro them having the opportunity to actually do that.
This is my point. Do you believe that those schools those students who have a chance to go to Sitwell, Friends, or Murray, or any of these schools that educate children in what we would call rare air, that they would leave behind these other children because, okay, these are challenged communities. You live in Ward 8. You live in Ward 8 for a reason. Mm-hmm. So why can't the Malik Abduls of the world say, President Trump, do your choice, but make sure that everybody has a chance?
Well, I don't think that that's something. Well, we all know that as far as education is concerned, a lot of that really is dictated on the local level.
Yep.
So the policies here in D.C. are policies that Democrats have actually implemented. I think that we should have charter schools. We should kids, if they have an opportunity to go to a private school or whatever. I don't think we have time to sit around amongst adults and say to ourselves, I volunteer at Bishop Walker School for Boys in Ward 8. And the joy that I see, the innocence that I see on these boys' faces, I want them to have the opportunity to go to any school, go to any office, opportunity, take advantage of it. We spend a lot of times, we adults, spend a time, a lot of times we're in our feelings about these certain things, when at the end of the day, this is about the children. This should be about the children. So no, I'm not going to tell those boys that I volunteer every week that, no, well, you really shouldn't have this opportunity to go to this school because some other adult think it may be taking enough resources away from
other
schools.
Let's be very clear about education and American politics. The Republican Party has never cared in modern American history about public education. The most recent president that claimed to care was President Bush, who, along with former Senator Kennedy, who's now deceased, worked together to pass the No Child Left Behind Act, which, of course, we know left thousands of children behind. And how did it leave them behind? Because it introduced this idea of school choice in my home state of states like Ohio, where that became almost the norm in urban school districts where minority kids who grew up in minority neighborhoods, because you remember in United States, your education is only as good as the zip code you were born in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's only as good as the wealthy or lack of wealth that your parents or guardians have.
Yep.
And so when you create school choice, what you're also creating is is the absence of people of color from their communities who are no longer being educated by black and brown teachers, perhaps in their local school district, no longer living and working and playing in the minority areas that help bring up the diversity that makes this country as amazing as it is. And then you go, then they go and they leave and go to another school in another side of town, and they get a different experience, but there's actually very little data that says that experience is better.
Absolutely.
Yes, it gives them a choice, but there's no data that says in the aggregate for the past 15 or so years since we've passed No Child Left Behind, the data is better. Yeah, there's some charter schools that are good. There are some public schools that are good. There are some private schools that are horrible. Like the idea that a school is private, public, or charter does not make it good. We know what makes schools good. It's resources. It's investment. And that investment has to come from government.
And that's what I'm talking about.
And it has to be led by individual citizens who participate and petition their local and state government. But also, yes, the federal government plays a role. We have the Department of Education for a reason. And it's largely because this is the same party that, remember, has used education to keep black people out. It's the same party that appoints members of state boards of education around the country and to tell you that you can't have books in your sixth grade classroom that teaches you about slavery. Oh, we're not going to talk about the fact that this is the 100th anniversary of women being allowed to vote.
But why does all of that matter, though?
Well, it does matter.
It does matter.
It absolutely matters. If you're going to change the culture and you're going to dumb down your history, my history, her history, his history, and I think the last point, yes, it absolutely
it doesn't
matter.
That right there doesn't matter.
It does matter.
And I'm talking about my experiences living in Ward 8. So I don't know where you live.
I live in Ward 7.
Well, I don't know where you live. I live in Ward 8. And so I know the opportunities. We're having this adult conversation about, I don't care, Democrat or Republican. So what that some adult doesn't like charter schools? It's not about liking charter schools. It's not your decision.
Go ahead,
it's literally not your decision.
And it's not your decision either.
I support parents having the choice. Not you dictating that for the parent.
But
why can't the parent have the choice?
But why can't states require?
Why can't we have quality public schools?
Right.
You could have quality.
Ask the mayor.
The people who control curriculum is not a local school board. It's a state board of education who is appointed by governors. And most governors right now in this country have a state board of education. DC does have a state board of education.
Let me say this to this point. I'm not just talking about DC.
No, I'm talking about the nation.
I would like to end on an up note, although there probably obviously are politics to this as well. Why wouldn't there be? Brigadier General Charles McGee, one of the last surviving Tuskegee Airmen, World War II, later fought in Korea and Vietnam, yes, and lived to tell the tale. You can't tell
it?
Me God doesn't have something to do with that.
He was
promoted by President Trump. Yes, there's
a
part
great
of me.
Moment.
Yeah, there's a part of me that says it's all politics, throwing something for black folks.
That man was pimped out by President
Trump. Don't sully that man like that by saying he was pimped out.
Yeah, don't tell me what to do.
Why can't that just be a good moment?
You've been talking about your opinion.
Let's be clear. President Trump does not care about African Americans. We can end on that note.
That's just BS. I mean,
it's not BS, Malik.
BS
okay, you think you can talk over
me.
All of us to push
I'm not
to,
trying to talk
to
over you. I'm
your
trying,
point. First of all,
I'm not trying to talk
yes,
over
you are. Because
let me say this. Can we all agree to salute this African American,
yeah, please,
hero.
Absolutely,
please.
Absolutely,
warrior,
absolutely,
and,
salute him.
That's right, an educated man,
right? Yeah,
yes, indeed.
Glad
Charles
the president
McGee.
Brought him there.
Yes, let me tell you.
He used him. The brother, anyway.
Come on.
We gotta congratulate him, but I have nothing good to say about 45.
Well, of course
he made him. He made him his cameo moment.
Of course you.
Oh,
don't.
I care
you
about
have.
Black people.
Woo. I gotta get out of here, Dr. Malvo, Robbie Perry, Malik Abdul. Thanks for talking to us. Boy, I tell you, tomorrow is another day. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 5th. I'm Harold Fisher. The Connection is next. Good night, everybody.